This show proudly sponsored by Real American Freestyle Wrestling.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. Now, I was looking for fun ways to tell you that Mint's offer of unlimited premium wireless for $15 a month is back. So I thought it would be fun if we made $15 bills. But it turns out that's very illegal. So there goes my big idea for the commercial. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 for 3-month plan equivalent to $15 per month required. New customer offer for first 3 months only. Speed slow after 35 gigabytes if network's busy. Taxes and fees extra. See mintmobile.com.
You know that one friend who somehow knows everything about money? Yeah, now imagine they live in your phone. Say hey to Experian, your big financial friend. It's the app that helps you check your FICO score, find ways to save, and basically feel like a financial genius. And guess what? It's totally free. So go on, download the Experian app. Trust me, having a BFF like this is a total game changer.
News radio studios in Midtown Manhattan. It's the fastest growing radio talk show. Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. So glad you're there. Brian Kilmeade Show moving forward on this Wednesday. Big day is going to be happening. The President of the United States will have a dinner with the Qatari Prime Minister. He's a good friend. They've known each other before the President became President. Jabar al-Tahani, that's a whole royal family thing they got going over there. And obviously, Qataris, along with the Steve Witkoff, are trying to get some type of ceasefire going in Gaza, among many other things, including that is where the base was that Iran rocketed with 15 rockets. Even though it was U.S. base, it was in Qatari property. So the president will have that meet and greet today. Meanwhile, we're also following a would-be get-to-know-you lunch or breakfast with Zohran Mamdani. Problem is, it doesn't look like any Democrats are showing up for it. No joke. Let's get to the big three.
Number three.
We just made a deal today, a big one with Indonesia. They've opened up Indonesia fully. You know, Indonesia really has great copper, very, very powerful copper, but they have a lot of things, and we have full access to Indonesia.
Yep, 19% trade in terms of a tariff. Inflation not tamed, but trade, tech, and deregulation has the American economy about to blast off as Indonesia is the latest to rearrange trade with the U.S. I expect more today.
Number two.
Really excited for the Democratic nominee, Zohran Mamdani. I think a lot of people just need to get to know folks before they issue an endorsement. And I hope that this conversation can be constructive to bringing the party together and rallying behind our nominee.
Yeah, not likely. That's just me. Meanwhile, New York Democratic mayor, primary winner, socialist Zohran Mamdani, hits D.C. searching for some type of endorsement from any Democratic leader that is not in the squad. Meanwhile, the 28 race for president already underway. One, Gavin Newsom making it clear he wants to be included.
Number one.
The Department of Homeland Security is blaming Democratic politicians for a spike in recent assaults on U.S. Immigration and Customs officers. DHS Secretary Kristi Noem directing her ire at California Governor Gavin Newsom.
Yep, no doubt about it, Lucas Tomlinson. Stunning success. That's the only way to characterize the sealing of both our major borders as ICE and Dems fight it out in almost every way. And what's happening is these Democratic cities, these Democratic states is finding it. They think they'll get traction by standing up for illegal immigrants, and many of which turn out to be criminals. For example, did you see the outrageous display at the marijuana farm? People saying, well, why are you going on farms, Mr. President? You shouldn't do it. Well, 300 arrests, including 14 children on possibly forced labor on those marijuana farms. And why would Gavin Newsom push back on it? Maybe because the owner of the farm gave him $10,000. So it just seems that Democrats, I guess, feel as though their fight is with ICE. Cut seven is Senator Mark Wayne Mullen.
The Democrat Party is more interested in supporting illegals and those that have broken the law to actually support their own community that wants to live in safety without fear of walking down the streets. But President Trump ran on restoring law and order in even blue cities, and they can't stand it. They cannot give this administration any win, even though he's working for their own constituents that probably didn't vote for President Trump. But the list goes on. I mean, as you recited just a second ago, Sean, these five Iranians that came across our Canadian border, not our southern border, that, keep in mind, the Iranian regime just recently said they're going to activate their cell, the sleeper cells. Let's talk about that. How dangerous could that be to every community around there, and yet they still can't support the ICE?
Yeah, it's unbelievable. And when you talk about Los Angeles, even though they're pulling out the National Guard because things have settled down, it didn't stop in June. There were 2,792 arrests in Los Angeles, even though they're a sanctuary city with allegedly no cooperation. 850 arrests in May. That's up 228%. So it looks like you got a major problem on your hands, but Mayor Karen Bass thinks that standing up for illegal immigrants and giving those here illegally who are afraid to go to work some taxpayer dollars is the ticket to success. A little bit different philosophy in Nassau County, Long Island, one of the biggest counties in the country and the safest. Here's Bruce Blakeman. They have a different view. Cut nine.
In Nassau County, when I became county executive, I declared we are not a sanctuary county. We work very closely with ICE. We're the first county to enter into a partnership with ICE, both with our sheriff's department and our police department. We take the law very seriously, and that's why we're the safest county in America, because we work with our federal, state, and local partners, and we make sure that we have the safest communities, because people want to live and do business in a place that's safe, and we understand that.
Right.
We're not pro-criminal.
Yeah, that's how about that? Rich Lowry at the bottom of the hour will expand on this. Meanwhile, this mayor race, why would I bring up the mayor race? Because the guy's views are so extreme about defunding the police that almost destroyed the Democratic Party. This guy embraces it. He also says jaywalking tickets for anybody with involved in a domestic dispute shows how clueless he is. Yesterday, he had a meeting, asked for a meeting with business leaders. How did it go? How about terrible? It looks like nobody showed up. Jamie Dimon, Steve Schwarzman of Blackstone, Brian Moynihan of Bank of America, Larry Fink of BlackRock, David Solomon of Goldman Sachs, all did not show up. This guy, Rob Spire, the chief executive of Tishman Spire, a real estate company behemoth, asked Mondami whether he was concerned about raising taxes would create an exodus from New York. He said he really had no answer. The topic of Israel was a focal point of several business leaders on Tuesday. He didn't have any great answers. Know what the word was? The phrase was, he talks a lot and says little. So one quote that Charles Gasparino got is from the CEO, from one CEO. He says, in New York City, if this guy wins, it's a lost cause. And he believes that the partnership run by Kathy Wild is an increasingly impotent advocate to turn back the increasing leftist political cases. Most business leaders I know are looking to exit rather than stay in New York City. This guy, John Hine, says today's meeting made it clear that if I need to do everything, I need to do everything in my power to make sure Mamdani does not become mayor. Yet he has 40% of the vote on the last poll. Cuomo has 24. Adams has 15. And Sliwa has 14. Just an embarrassment. It's an embarrassment. And he's fully backed by the socialist, AOC, and Bernie Sanders. Alexis McAdams asked President Trump if Mondami winning is the future of the party. Cut four.
Another person that was meeting with business leaders today was Zohran Mamdani. I know you talk a lot about him. People didn't really know who he was not too long ago. His name's out there a lot. He kind of was able to make something happen in New York. He's going to meet with AOC. He's coming to Washington, D.C. Is that the future of the Democratic Party there?
I tend to doubt it. Look, you know, I think he's got a somewhat slightly different viewpoint on business and life than I do. I think we have two of the very great opposites. I have to wish him well. It's sort of lightning in a bottle. Let's see what happens.
Because if you have a socialist get elected to number one city, you see how terrible he's going to be. He hates capitalism, but yet it's the capitalistic capital of the world. And you have Jeffries, Schumer, Governor Hochul, Dan Goldman, congressman. Nobody's showing up. Nobody's talking to him. Debbie Dingell, a so-called moderate from Michigan, Democrat.
We are a party that has a big tent. We have members that win in districts that are as district and as diverse as this country is. And I learn from my Blue Dogs, and I learn from my colleagues in New York City. AOC is one of the smartest women. You've seen her. He's a very bright, personable person.
Good luck with that. Let him be your standard bearer. Go ahead. You're right. Let him be the charismatic 33-year-old without any accomplishments, a radical past, who on October 8th, gets arrested protesting against Israel. Well, go ahead. Diverse views. And there's wrong views. I'm all for different views, but you go ahead. Let that be your standard bearer in the number one city, the number one mayoral position in the country, and that's where you stand. The other thing is Democrats are trying to get their act together and run for president. The word is, by the AP, about 30 will run for president, they think, or are making plans to run for president on the Democratic side. Gavin Newsom seems to be out first. He goes and does these podcasts where he knows he's going to be greeted hostily, even though respectfully, because he's governor of a state. But his report card's terrible. The state's got a $1 billion deficit. More people are leaving that are coming. Taxes are through the roof. Energy costs because of decisions he and his legislatures have made are through the roof. Sometimes eight gas and in some places $8 a gallon, which is just insane. So he sits down with Sean Ryan on his podcast and he tries to act tough. This guy looks so phony. I mean, it's unbelievable. He looks like an act. So to act tough on a bro broadcast, he thinks he's got a curse. Listen to this guy, cut 21.
Mother no bull. Believe that. Out of here. The son of a God gift. God despise me for the I read too.
This is the guy that eats at the French Laundry. He's from an elitist background, rich background. He's part of the Nancy Pelosi extended family in California. Did a terrible job as mayor, awful job as a two-term governor, almost recalled, and now he wants to act like a tough moderate when no one thinks he's a tough moderate. If you listen, he won't even commit to saying that transition surgery on eight-year-olds is out of bounds. But listen to him here. For example, he gets text messages from Joe Rogan listening to the podcast and questions to Gavin Newsom about the way he handled the pandemic. I'll give you one word, awful. Listen to this, cut 23.
What are some of the things during COVID that you think maybe were a mistake?
We were concerned it was airborne and folks, you know, we were worried about people being outside even. And we realized then after the fact, what the hell are we doing shutting down the beaches and open areas?
Do you think that some of the restrictions that you put in place created a mental health crisis being locked up, people, by not being able to enjoy the outdoors?
It was devastating. Come on, man. Of course.
Do you ever say that? Do you ever push back like Governor DeSantis, who would get up at 6 in the morning, talk to doctors at the White House when Trump was in office, and find out what was coming at him, look at the numbers, and realize quickly that being outside is the best thing? They were shut down for maybe 10 days, and they opened up. This guy kept them locked down. He put sand in skate parks to stop teenagers from going rollerblading or skateboarding. Is that nuts? Cut 23. Oh, I'm sorry. Let's talk a little bit more about this. Let's talk about what he says was a failure at the border, but of course, exonerating himself. Cut 25.
Do you feel like the last administration was divisive?
I think, you know, we got ideological, you know, and failed at the border. And they've sent me two bills I've had to veto where they didn't want me to cooperate with ICE for these 11,000+ people. I just think they're wrong. My party's wrong on that.
Right. But you did nothing to reinforce the border. You said your border was safe. Yet there are signs everywhere that shows like exaggerated signs that says, you know, basically look out for border crossers going across highways. So will he run in 28? Cut 26.
Are you gearing up for a 2028 run?
No, I'm blown away at the Democrats' obsession with just that sort of perfect person that's going to say, you know, sort of this John Wayne thing, this romantic version. That person's going to save the day. Meanwhile, we're not doing the hard work. The more Trump keeps doing what he does, the more compelled I am to think about it. I've never felt more outrage, more anger.
So, Governor Newsom, you have to watch his hands and how insincere and insecure and uncomfortable he looks in doing this. I just think it's so important. My hope is that people see through this. People think that, wow, it looks like the candidate. Yeah, but if he was even acting, someone says, listen, I got to cast a governor who wants to be president. I would say, you're overacting. What are you doing? Just act like yourself. You know, be out there, show charisma, show some presence, show some confidence. Instead, this false humility, this claiming that you're a moderate when all your policies that could have reflected your moderate views are changing views, you're not implementing. In fact, you're not even doing your job as governor. Meanwhile, a third of Los Angeles is still burned to the ground. 5% of permits, let alone rebuild, have been submitted. And you saw what happened in the city of Los Angeles, and you saw what happened in places like MacArthur Park, this marijuana farm. He doesn't feel compelled to be in California during this time. That's your 2028 candidate. Andy Beshear is somebody. I guess Wes Moore is going to be somebody else. You got somebody, Mayor Pete is probably going to be running. Senator Klobuchar's under the illusion people want to see her. Good luck with that. For Barack Obama to come out yesterday, 2 days ago, and say, buckle up, stop navel-gazing, start acting tough, he's missing the point. People want ideas. How are you going to do it? How are you going to balance the budget? Stop bringing up Trump. Just move ahead with your vision. And also, learn from what America was repelled by. Not backing up the border. The political correctness when it comes to pronouns and transgenders in sports. Building up a strong defense, not apologizing overseas. And I think that the president of the United States is going all in on all energy and all AI. That's what you needed. You need someone reining in cryptocurrency. You didn't need someone reining in AI. You needed to be jet-fueled responsibly. So when we come back, I'll take some calls, 1-866-408-7669. Then Rich Lowry at the bottom of the hour. Don't move.
Politics, current events, and news that affects you. Brian's got a lot more to say. Stay with Brian Kilmeade.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Do you ever find yourself playing the budgeting game? Well, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive, you can find options that fit your budget and potentially lower your bills. Try it at progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law. Not available in all states.
Radio that makes you think. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
So Michael Waltz finally had his day at his hearing yesterday to be the UN ambassador. And my hope is he just gets through. But as usual, people had to sound off on the whole signal chat thing and also how much they don't like the president's foreign policy. But Michael Waltz was strong. Green Beret, longtime congressman, successful businessman, even worked with Dick Cheney in the vice president's office. Cut 34.
Ronald Reagan once said the UN can, quote, solve problems or spread discord. He said the choice is ours. In just 6 months, President Trump has brought dozens of hostages home, justice for our Abbeygate Gold Star families, secured the border, denied Iran a nuclear weapon, brought ceasefires to conflicts in Africa, the Middle East, and Asia. Yet there is still tremendous work to be done. I'm confident under this president's leadership, we can continue to spread peace and prosperity, and I'm confident we can make the UN great again.
So underreported how few undersecretaries, deputy secretaries have been confirmed. What happens is if they do get out of committee, they take forever to get the floor vote. That's one way of Democrats to deprive people like Sean Duffy, hardworking cabinet secretaries, of staff they need to be effective. As usual, Senator Chuck Schumer never served a day in his life, had no problem questioning the integrity of a Green Beret. Cut 36.
On Mike Waltz. This morning, the Senate Foreign Relations Committee is hearing testimony from Donald Trump's nominee for U.S. Ambassador to the United Nations, Mike Waltz. If that name sounds familiar, it's because the same Mike Waltz was fired as the National Security Advisor a few months ago after sharing military plans in a group chat with a journalist on Signal. Mr. Waltz was part of the crack team that has grossly mismanaged national security during the opening months of the administration.
See, you say grossly mismanaged, and I think thrived. They've done extremely well, from the Houthi rebels to the bombing in Iran to the talks that have taken place and various opportunities, including hotbeds and Gaza on down. So Mike Waltz, just hopefully you'll persevere this and then you'll become a UN ambassador and dominate up there. Brian Kilmeade Show, Rich Lowry next.
At Blinds.com, it's not just about window treatments. It's about you, your style, your space, your way. Whether you DIY or want the pros to handle it all, you'll have the confidence of knowing it's done right. From free expert design help to our 100% satisfaction guarantee, everything we do is made to fit your life and your windows. Because at Blinds.com, the only thing we treat better than windows is you. Visit Blinds.com now for up to 50% off with minimum purchase, plus a professional measure at no cost. Rules and restrictions apply.
Breaking news, unique opinions. Hear it all on the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Really love to go. I mean, I look forward to meeting them both. I know them both very well through what I read and through what I see. Look, he's a communist. I don't think our country is ready for a communist, but we're going to see. And I don't think that race is over yet either. You do have a couple of people running against, and it'll be an interesting thing. Things are coming out about him which aren't good.
Yeah, but the more people kind of knew about it, they still voted for him anyway. And they're talking about Mamdani, who is now meeting with, I don't know how many Democratic leaders showed up for AOC's breakfast with Mamdani. Zohran is radioactive. He's a Marxist, does not like capitalism, said to afford defunding the police, anti-Israel, wants to arrest Netanyahu, wants to arrest Prime Minister Modi of India. Even though he doesn't have the ability to do it, the fact that he feels these things would normally be disqualifying. But instead, it gets him a 20-point lead in the mayoral election. Rich Lowry, editor of National Review. Make sense of this, Rich.
Well, I mean, the problem is he's radioactive to the average normal person, or should be. But New York City is a Democratic town. About 70% of the electorate in November will be Democrats. And you need to turn a lot of them against the nominee of their own party. So the problem now is Andrew Cuomo and Eric Adams have higher negatives than Mamdani does. So if they can get his negatives up among Democrats and can convince average Democrats that he's a threat to their way of life and to the safety of their city, maybe something can break loose, but otherwise it's not going to.
No one's showing up. I mean, I would like to see Democrats, if they say nothing, they might as well endorse him. But Jeffrey's going to meet with him tomorrow. Schumer, Dan Goldman, Gerald Nadler, I guess, showed up at the breakfast today. That might be the only Jewish lawmaker that did. Mm-hmm. And then you have Governor Hochul's not endorsing him. So could you have a guy who's got a 20-point lead in the race become mayor with no significant endorsements?
Yeah, possibly. You know, I think endorsements and money are overrated in politics. You prefer to have them. Rather than the alternative, but you know this is a guy that caught people's imagination, and you know affordability is a good theme. It's not necessarily a socialist theme, right? It's something that most people in this city feel very deeply. And Cuomo is now aping that message, but Mamdani was there first. Now his solutions are insane and will make the problem worse. I mean, the basic issue is New York City has already embraced a bunch of socialistic policies that have made things more expensive, and he wants to double down. So it's not going to work. But you're someone who's facing, you know, 16% rent increase year over year. You might listen to him.
So they got some disciples of his who feel heartened. The socialist, a Minnesota state senator, wants to be congressman. Omar Fatch, he's on the same ticket. In Arizona, Deja Fox lost, but made a run at the open Senate seat, lost to Gravala's daughter, who passed away in office. So they do have someone running for the empty Senate seat in Michigan on the Democratic ticket, the socialist ticket. So do you think that if you are the director of the DNC, you think that you're happy about this? Does this show a big tent movement?
No, I don't think you're very happy about it. You're very, very worried about it. And this is something, you know, Democrats have done a fairly good job of, is selecting fairly reasonable candidates and holding back this tide. But I'm not sure how long that can last, and especially Chuck Schumer. I got to be really worried, right, about an AOC primary in a couple of years.
Are you worried? I mean, he's already 80. Is he for sure running still?
No. If I were him, this would be a good opportunity to let go. But very few of them ever do, right?
Yeah, I know. They don't seem to go anywhere. What is your take on what's going on with the Republican Party now and the fallout since Bondi and Bongino and Patel said case closed on Epstein?
Yeah, I think they're probably going to have to release more. And as long as they're not violating grand secrecy rules or exposing victims or exposing people who might be incidentally mentioned somewhere in these files who didn't do anything wrong and besmirching their reputation, I think that's appropriate. But I just don't, you know, I think the guy was a monster. There's always going to be a certain mystery around what happened and how he operated. But the idea that, you know, Dan Bongino would give up a cushy life to go in and be deputy director of the FBI and immediately be part of a conspiracy that he warned about before he was in there is crazy. I mean, if there's a real conspiracy, he'd quit and then he'd be bigger than ever on the outside, blowing the whistle on it. And so I take his word and Cash's word and Bondi's word, although I don't like how she's handled this, that there's nothing there in the sense that some world-shaking scandal. And it can be true that we shouldn't trust government. It can also be true that there's just not a massive conspiracy there.
So I happen to know directly that Donald Trump is really befuddled that guys that and women like Marjorie Taylor Greene and others, okay, that's where the rubber hits the road. I'm out. You know, you're watching the Alex Joneses and the extremes in the social media world sit there and condemn and rant and rave. And is that the MAGA base? Steve Bannon, well, is that the MAGA base?
You know, it's an element of it, but it's not the entirety of the president's base. And MAGA, at the end of the day, it's all about Trump. You know, he can call Charlie Kirk and say, Charlie, stop talking about this. And Charlie says, okay. Now, not everyone's going to do that, but a lot are. And just at the end of the day, people in the midterms are going to vote on this. You know, they're going to dismiss everything he's done. And I mean, it's been a historic run in the last month or so. Unbelievable. Within the next 24 hours, he could actually succeed in defunding public broadcasting, something Republicans have been trying to do for 40 years. I wrote a column the other day in favor of it. And I was like, this feels so familiar to me. I've written this column over and over again. And it finally might happen. You know, it's extraordinary. So I get the president's frustration that we're wrapped around the axle of this when there's so much more important going on.
Yeah, we were talking about the NPR and PBS, part of a rescission package. At first, they were going to get rid of PEPFAR, which was an AIDS drug, 26 years going, but they decided to pull that because they couldn't get the votes. But it looks like they're going to go ahead with the rescission package, and they'll say there'll be others. You know, when you go into a budget that's approved and start cutting it up, it's only been done one time successfully before by George H.W. Bush. It was tried for Trump in 2018, didn't work.
Yeah, it's been a very long time. And look, you know, this I've got to balance the budget, obviously, but $9 billion is real money. And this is great. This is legislating. You know, a lot of those members, they think PEPFAR is important. You keep it in, right? Mike Rounds, you know, rural state senator, worried about some of the more remote rural NPR stations. Okay, we'll have some funding in the Department of Interior just for stations on Native American land, you know, but we'll cut the rest. So this is great, you know? So again, it should be salad days. You know, MAGA supported this guy from the beginning, right? He wouldn't have gotten where he was without their support, and that they're driving themselves nuts over this Epstein thing when there's so much else good going on, again, doesn't make any sense to
me. But Rich, he came into office, said no more Middle East wars, and I'm going to look to get a deal done with Iran. He gave them five rounds and took out their nuclear program. And then he went in and said, I'm going to bring this war with Ukraine to an end. And it was Putin's side makes it impossible. So he decides I'm giving him more weapons. And that's upset Steve Bannon and then and others who said, I thought you said no more war. It's not our war. Maybe even J.D. Vance is upset. I'm not sure. And then you have other people that are upset that he went in and bombed Iran. These people, we all know their names, were upset by that. You're going to start a Middle Eastern war and we're all going to lose. Remember that?
Yeah.
So he's governing.
The thing is that exactly. And he's a Republican moderate. He's right in the middle of where the party is. So he's not where Steve Bannon is on everything. He is on some stuff. But the way he's acted on this stuff is rational. You give Iran a chance, they don't come through. you bomb him. You try to do the peace deal, and you know he gave Putin every opportunity, more than I would have liked to seen to see. And then he finally realizes it's futile, so he's going to support Ukraine and then see if something shakes loose further down the road. This is what you want. I think it's been excellent.
Here is what Sergey Lavrov said about the president. Says, yeah, fifth, we're giving Patriots and more to Ukraine, and you have 50 days to come to the table, or massive sanctions are coming your way. Here's their foreign minister, cut 29.
It used to be 24 hours, and it was 100 days. We've all been through this. We already have an unprecedented number of sanctions declared against us, and we are coping. I have no doubt that we will cope.
Right, but it's not a matter of you coping. These are going to be sanctions on India, Brazil, China, and others that are buying your oil, right?
Yeah. So I don't think the tariff threat, I don't think anything's going to come of that. That's just they're sort of immune to that. But secondary sanctions could be significant. But as we've talked about for a while now, I mean, the main thing is arming Ukraine and just making it clear to Putin, all right, this has been a meat grinder. Maybe you think you can sustain it for the long term, but it's going to be really, really painful. And then maybe you'll change your mind a year from now. And it seems as though that's the route the president's going down. And I think that's a good thing.
Right. It looks like North Korea is supplying between 40 and 50% of all the artillery, the drones. They're using the patent from Iran, but no longer need Iran directly. So they just can build it on their own. 92% of the components in the drones are Chinese. So this is a world evil effort to keep Russia fighting, or else they would have been down for the count. I like that NATO seems to be digging in.
Yeah, and I mean, the turnaround we've seen from NATO is just extraordinary as well, that he's gotten everyone up except for Spain, you know, at least a commitment to go to 5%, you know, a huge number in terms of where it's been in the past, and has gotten NATO to buy these weapons from us. So, you know, Trump's terms, that's a good deal. So that's none of that would have happened without Trump's particular MO, where he's willing to rattle his people's cages in a way no one else will. And sometimes that's very uncomfortable. It can be a little ugly to watch at times, but it's you can't argue with the results here.
Right. And I just think about what Mark Cuban said. Democrats got to get a plan that doesn't involve Trump sucks, because we know how you feel and where's it gotten you. Thanks so much, Rich Lowry. National Review.
Thanks,
appreciate it.
All right.
I talked about PBS and also talked about what's going on with Mamdani and why it's so much bigger than just a race in New York City. So, Brian Kilmeade Show, moving through this hour, important time, 1-866-408-7669. Quick note, I'm going to be in Richmond, Virginia, September 27th. There's some tickets left. Go to briankilmeade.com, WRVA. I hope to see you in person, as well as August 23rd. I'm going to be in Dallas, Texas, and I hope to see everybody in person. History, Liberty, and Laughs, also with Fox Nation. Don't move.
Giving you everything you need to know. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
This is Jimmy Fallon, inviting you to join me for Fox Across America, where we'll discuss every single one of the Democrats' dumb ideas. Just kidding. It's only a 3-hour show. Listen live at noon Eastern or get the podcast at foxacrossamerica.com.
The fastest 3 hours in radio. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
A home run swing off to decide the All-Star game. Three batters per team, three swings apiece. The teams are going to alternate, and it's pretty simple. Whoever hits the most home runs wins the 95th All-Star game. NL has rallied in the swing off.
With the hat trick, National League takes the lead 4-3.
Down to this swing for the American League. Aranda slices a fly ball to left center field, headed towards the wall, but short, and the National League wins it in the first swing off. Kyle Schwarber wins it. The National League, after watching a 6-0 lead disappear in the game, still win this All-Star game with a swing off.
So there you go. Swing off. That decided the All-Star game, an inconsequential game, which is fun for the fans. Don't know what the ratings are, but Fox did a fantastic job. But I never heard of a swing off before. I was watching these highlights saying, are we watching batting practice? Because they put the fencing up in front of the pitcher, and the pitcher just lobs it over. So you keep hitting homers until someone doesn't, and then you have it off. And Schwarber, I guess, is the key. They get another day off, and then they go back to playing the second half. Now, for the Mets and Yankees, they have to go make a trade. Everybody else, you're on your own. They have the money. By the way, the Tampa Rays were just sold for $1.4 billion. They're one of the finest teams in sports, but they don't draw fans. I don't know how much longer they're going to last in Tampa. So now to the other game, the game of politics. Yesterday, 2 days ago, in New Jersey, Barack Obama shows up at a fundraiser where he, I guess, rose $2.4 million at Governor Murphy's house. So if it doesn't reek of elitist, the former CEO of Goldman Sachs and governor, rich guy interviewing a almost billionaire former president. And he gives a speech saying that it's time to buckle up, stop navel gazing and just start fighting Trump. Really? What example is that? When did you fight at all for anybody but yourself? Didn't fight to get Joe Biden out? You didn't fight on to get the border built up? You didn't act like Bill Maher calling out your party before it was too late? They ignored him. They wouldn't have ignored you. So when the president speaks up like that, former president, you would think people will back him up. But Charlemagne the God didn't. Cut 43.
It's mind-boggling to me when I hear people like President Obama say things that regular, everyday people been saying for years. We've been saying Democrats were cowards for a decade. We've been saying Democrats need to toughen up. And that cowardice is, you know, why we're in the position that we're in now. So it's just wild to hear President Obama say that now as if Democrats haven't been cowards for the past decade.
But see, he went on to say they should have gotten rid of RPG, Ruth Bader Ginsburg. I don't know. I mean, what do you do? How do you tell a Supreme Court justice to leave? She wouldn't leave. So she died in office and they end up flipping it to Kavanaugh. So that's what they're saying. You should have told Joe Biden to leave. That really should have been done because it would not have been easy because the whole family wanted him to stay there. But if Barack Obama went out and said, listen, Joe, I've met with Joe. I just think it's in his best interest medically for him to step aside right now. And I also wouldn't have, you know, I would have stopped Jim Clyburn from making him pick a minority woman because it left him with two choices. And one of which, one was Val Demings and the other was Kamala Harris. So he took Harris and she was such a bad alternative that no one really pushed Biden out. But if you're Charlemagne the God and people are listening, say, listen, this guy's shot. But I don't think Charlemagne was saying get rid of Joe Biden, make him a one-termer, especially after the midterms went so well. They thought, we'll just leave this guy in office, make all the decisions. No one will ever know any different, and Trump is going to be so sullied after all his court cases. He'll get the nomination, but the party will be a mess. Man, didn't that blow up? Here's Whoopi Goldberg.
So let me remind everybody who was out in the front lines marching when we had the giant marches that went on. It was the people. The people went out. They were not navel gazing. It was older people who were saying, why are you touching my Social Security? It was not people whining. It was about people saying, why are you taking these rights from my child when my child was born here? This has not been about Democrats laying back. This has been about y'all. This has been about y'all because their messaging was always the same.
Y'all, all of a sudden she's from the South. It's about y'all messaging the same. I don't know what march she's talking about. So I just don't understand the word fight. I want to fight. Well, how? Do you think that Cory Booker did a good job fighting, just talking for 12 hours? Do you think Hakeem Jeffries did a good job fighting, just filibustering the 4 hour passage of the, for 4 hours, filibustering the passage of the big, beautiful law? Do you think that there was a good idea with the New Jersey ICE, with the woman who bulldozed her way through ICE officials in New Jersey, or by Senator the Senator Padilla being wrestled to the ground when he's threatening Governor Noem? Is that what former Governor Noem, now Secretary Noem? I don't understand what you find. People want ideas. They just don't want us screaming. Let them scream. You have to come up with ideas. Make people want to vote for you. Brian Kilmeade Show.
It is time to take the quiz.
It's five questions in less than 5 minutes. We ask people on the streets of New York City to play along. Let's see how you do.
Take the quiz every day at thequiz.fox. Then come back here to see how you did.
Thank you for taking the quiz.
From high atop Fox News headquarters in New York City, always seeking solutions, never sowing division, it's Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. So glad you're here. Well, I'm at 48th and 6th in Midtown Manhattan, heard around the country, around the world. This hour, I'll be joined by Jason Riley, the Wall Street Journal. And then we'll talk about the Wounded Warrior Project with the new CEO. And we'll get to the bottom of that. Meanwhile, we're following a bunch of stories, including the morning breakfast with this controversial mayor who won the Democratic primary in New York City and is up by 20 in all the polls, Cuomo and Adams. Mamdani, they whisked him out through the garage. I don't know why he doesn't want to meet the press, why he go to D.C. and not meet the press, trying to impress some Democrats who look at him in many cases as radioactive, and they should. So let's get to the big three.
Number three.
We just made a deal today, a big one with Indonesia. They've opened up Indonesia fully. You know, Indonesia really has great copper, very, very powerful copper, but they have a lot of things, and we have full access to Indonesia.
There you go. One deal done. That means the UK, Indonesia, and Vietnam. Inflation not tamed, but trade, tech, and deregulation has been. Really have the economy ready to blast off. Now that we have this trade deal done, I sense the EU will be next, followed by India, and who knows, maybe even Japan or Canada.
Number two.
Really excited for the Democratic nominee, Zohra Mamdani. I think a lot of people just need to get to know folks before they issue an endorsement. And I hope that this conversation can be constructive to bringing the party together and rallying behind our nominee.
Well, the business meetings did not go well. New York Democratic mayor primary winner, Socialist Zohra Mamdani in D.C. will give you the latest. Also, the latest on the 28 race. Democrats already jockeying for position, including one governor of California.
Number one.
The Department of Homeland Security is blaming Democratic politicians for a spike in recent assaults on U.S. Immigration and Customs officers. DHS Secretary Kristi Noem directing her ire at California Governor Gavin Newsom.
Yep, stunning success. That's the only way to characterize the sealing of both our borders under Donald Trump in 6 months as ICE and Dems fight it out in almost every way. And the more you think about it is, once again, a version of defund the police. When they talk about ICE and getting ICE out of your town and your city, it's a version of defund the police. We know better than law enforcement. We like our illegals. In fact, if you're Karen Bass, we'll find money and pay you because they don't want to go to work because they're afraid of being arrested. Get your mind around that. Jason Riley joins us now for the Wall Street Journal, Manhattan Institute senior fellow, Fox News contributor. Jason, welcome back.
Thanks for having me, Brian. Good morning.
And by the way, your latest book, The Affirmative Action Myth, Why Blacks Don't Need Racial Preferences to Succeed. Jason, first off, your thoughts about the breakfast that seems to be lightly attended by Democrats. Are they afraid of this guy?
You're right. He's radioactive. I think that is the proper word to use. They're being very pragmatic here, these Democrats who don't like Mamdani. They know that the country has by and large rejected the progressive agenda. I think Democrats, Brian, are looking for someone who will take on Donald Trump's policy. You'd expect that from the opposition party. But I also think Democrats are looking for someone who will take on the party's left wing, which they believe has driven Democrats into a ditch over the past few years. You know, Biden might have run as a moderate, but he certainly governed as a progressive. It was a disaster. They replaced him on the ticket with Kamala Harris, another progressive. It was a disaster. So they've seen this playbook before. They've seen how things turn out. And I think that's why you've seen the attitudes they've shown towards Mamdani.
So I want you to hear, this is AOC trying to explain him. Cut one.
Really excited for the Democratic nominee, Zohra Mamdani, to be here in Washington is to really, you know, experience and have people see him face to face and kick the tires, you know, themselves and hear what he has to say about making New York affordable for working people. I think a lot of people just need to get to know folks before they issue an endorsement. And I hope that this conversation can be constructive to bringing the party together and rallying behind our nominee.
He wants to be mayor of the financial capital of the country, maybe the world, and doesn't like capitalism. He wants to defund the police. I mean,
he wants to defund the police. So it's attitudes towards law enforcement, his attitudes towards education, just turning things over to the unions and letting them run with it, his attitudes towards Israel. You know, New York City is a heavily Jewish city, and yet this guy doesn't think that the Jewish state should exist. Globalize the Intifada is a slogan he does not have a problem with. There are all kinds of red flags with this individual. You know, he wants to raise taxes. He wants to open government-run grocery stores. This stuff has worked nowhere that it has been tried. And while it might sell in New York City, Brian, as you know, he is leading in the polls, I think smarter Democrats know that in places that aren't as liberal as New York City, this is a political loser. And that's why these Democrats are trying to distance themselves from him. Other than the progressives out there like Bernie Sanders, like AOC and so forth, I think the smarter Democrats, the more conscientious Democrats know that this is not a winning candidate nationwide and that the party really needs to start to distance himself from individuals like this.
So I look at the Wall Street Journal today and they say it's basically you admit it that Trump's idea when it comes to tariffs is working. He's bringing over $100 billion. He's got three trade deals. Do you look for him to cut more and use August 1st as a legitimate deadline like we see Major League Baseball and football use this as a trade deadline?
Well, we'll see. He set deadlines in the past, and I'm wondering if the people he's trying to negotiate, these other countries, are looking at that history and wondering if this is another deadline that might come and go. I mean, that's one thing I think they're certainly considering. You know, Trump wants the Fed to lower interest rates, Brian, and they're pointing to his tariff policy, to his trade policies, as a reason not to do that. You know, their inflation goal is 2%. Right now, according to the June report, we're closer to 3%. Trump is right that certain prices have gone down, like the price of eggs, like he likes to say. But prices of other things, you know, fresh produce, fruits, vegetables have gone up. Price of coffee has gone up. Why? Because a lot of those are imported goods, and because of the tariffs, prices have gone up for those goods. So Trump has got to convince the Fed that these tariff policies will not damage economic growth in this country. And maybe we'll see if he's able to do that. But I think that is his challenge right now.
The one thing is, I think it's fascinating to see that AI conference yesterday and see the billions of dollars are going to be poured in, that they feel like they're unleashed to go explore. And also, big story in your newspaper about the big push to get rare earth here at home. And ideally, we could be having our own air, our own magnets, our own metals between 3 and 5 years. Right now, China has 90% of the world's rare earth, and almost everybody on earth needs it.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And if we can develop those industries here domestically or do a better job of developing more of them here domestically, I think that's good. It's good for economic security. I think it's good just geopolitically. You don't want these bad actors out there controlling supply chains, controlling access to these valuable minerals and so forth. And so, no, this is all good. And I'm glad to see the Trump administration moving things in this direction.
Yeah, I think it was a very successful meeting yesterday. I just think it's pretty amazing to talk about cryptocurrency. He's open to it. A 79-year-old guy would normally, a lot of times traditionally, say, well, leave that stuff away. It doesn't seem real to me. When it comes to AI, you guys work it out. Instead, he said, let me lead and let me listen. He sits for the whole conferences and tries to take in as much as possible.
Yes, I agree. I think he's gotten some advice from his kids on some of these issues. And so, yeah, he's listening to the next generation and trying to stay up to date on things.
So, Jason, no one has to tell you it's coming up to year 250. And you would argue that this is also a big year, 249 in 1775, as we celebrate of the America's birth. But in the New York Times, they're going to go out of their way, you believe, to reaffirm their 1619 project that did more to harm a generation of America's kids about American history than anything else. Do you think they're still not embarrassed enough by the results of the 1619 project? They're going to reaffirm it?
Oh, I think absolutely. We got a preview of what to expect in the run-up to next year's celebration in the 1619 project, which was released 6 years ago. And the ideas put forth in this false history have only been mainstreamed since then. Nicole Hannah-Jones, the lead reporter at the Times behind the project, won a Pulitzer Prize as you know, the National Education Association, the nation's largest teachers union, has partnered with the New York Times to spread this false history in our K-12 school curriculum. Oprah Winfrey produced a miniseries based on the 1619 Project. So these ideas, unfortunately, are getting mainstreamed, and that's my concern. You're going to have people out there putting forth this false history that slavery was somehow this uniquely American evil, when in fact it was a global institution that has been seen in societies down through history. What really distinguishes America is emancipation, not slavery. And so I'm really particularly disturbed that our children are being taught this nonsense. And so I think, yes, the New York Times will use the 250th birthday of this country to double down on these. They have a political agenda. The agenda is to control the narrative, to gain more power by controlling that narrative. They are not interested in serious discussions about this nation's history, and they're willing to distort that history, if necessary, to push a political agenda.
Can you imagine if Kamala Harris had won or Joe Biden had won? With this 250, probably would have been an apology, 12 months of apologizing for America, in their view, their imperfections. One thing about President Trump, you don't have to doubt his patriotism. They already have the 250 movement going, fully staffed. It's going to be nonstop symbolism and ceremony for at least a year. Then you got it right into the Olympics.
No, you're absolutely right. We have no worries that Donald Trump will celebrate this off the charts and encourage everyone in the country to do that. And under Kamala Harris, probably under any Democratic president, there would have been pressure to put more balance into this history and to not be too jingoistic and so forth, or too pro-American, and to highlight some of the nation's faults and all that. But no, we have no worries about that happening under President Trump, Brian.
And I have a prediction. Before August 1st, we're going to get an EU deal, a Canadian deal, as well as a deal with India. I'm not sure about Japan moving off cars. That's my prediction, Jason. Remember this moment.
Okay, I will.
Wall Street Journal's Jason Riley, thanks. 1-866-408-7669. I'll be with you in just a moment. You listen to The Brian Kilmeade Show.
It's Brian Kilmeade.
It's Will Kane Country. Watch it live at noon Eastern Monday through Thursday at foxnews.com or on the Fox News YouTube channel. And don't miss the show. Listen and follow the podcast 5 days a week at foxnewspodcasts.com or wherever you download your favorite podcasts.
Talk show that's getting you talking. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
I am sold on Trump. In fact, I'll say this. I think he's got a good shot at going down in history as one of our best presidents ever.
That is a real turnaround because you didn't want to vote for him.
Well, I tell you the reason. I want to tell you, I'm a believer. What I'm seeing happening is absolutely nothing short of a great thing. People are walking with more bounce than it's all around. Knowledge implies one thing. When you made a mistake, admit it. One of the pilots on that miraculous trip to Iran that we wiped out, whatever the hell we wiped out, he said, you're the only guy that in the presidency that would have done what you did. One of the pilots said that.
Yeah.
And you know what? He's probably right.
And that's why there's so many people speculate on what it would look like. And he did it. He gave him 5 rounds of talks and he executed when the 6th round was going to be fruitless. We know that. And it became clear that they were going to weaponize a nuclear weapon because they thought time was running out and Israel was going to hit him. Regardless, it happened and he did it. Same thing with Ukraine. He makes the adjustment midterm, and that's Ken Langone. He is very successful. And then he's co-founder of Home Depot. He's done more philanthropy than almost anyone on the planet. You'll never hear of it. One thing he did is NYU Langone. It's one of the very successful series of medical hospitals and units. And he donated all the money, basically, and he made it, if you go to medical school, I think in certain schools, he pays for the entire tuition. But he came out and says, listen, I don't think, you know, Trump's not ready for the presidency. And then when he went to back after what happened on January 6th, he said he shouldn't be president. But now he's sitting there looking at what he's doing, how he's doing it, the way he's doing it, because people always said, I like his policies, but I don't like him. A lot of people see a difference in him. The fact is, when you come out and talk to cameras 4 times a day, hey, I'm getting on a plane, let me talk. I'll get an awful plane. Let me talk. I have a big meeting. Let me bring him in. We have a Bahrainian prime minister coming in, or leader coming in today. One of the kings or queens, or one of the kings. And he is going to meet with the press. He's going to bring everyone in the Oval Office. He's going to take questions. I'm not sure how into it, because they're going to start segueing over to Epstein, which I don't think is a big story. I know it's the MAGA right is going crazy for it. I'm not one. I just think there's so many legitimate things to be praised, to analyze, to be critical of. This is not one of them. You know, it's just not one of them. And I just don't see it. But when Ken Langone came out and said that, I said, we got to go show this. And I want people to understand. That this guy is not easily impressed. And I think he's 86 now. Still extremely sharp, extremely tuned in, extremely patriotic. Another thing that Ken Langone does, I think he sponsors a whole school. And he goes and meets with them in fifth grade, seventh grade, and ninth grade. And he makes sure they're on the right track. And he just tries to affect as many people as possible. Lives over in Manhasset, New York. And pretty impressed. And not impressed with our mayor, of course, that we discussed this before. He's not impressed with what's going on in New York City. We discussed this before. And but what we're also seeing, too, is that it's not just Mamdani. You got a situation where this Socialist Party, which is dearly David Hogg, who they finally ousted, David Martin ousted at head of the DNC. You have this Gen Z influencer, Deja Fox, made a big play for a vacant seat in Arizona. She only got 20% of the vote, but she was able to make a huge difference, got 20% from coming from nowhere. But she's also a big-time socialist. You have another guy on that socialist squad-like agenda. His name is Minnesota State Senator Omar Fatch. He's creating a big buzz, Minneapolis mayor race, with a Mamdani style. This is what they're saying. Promises to freeze rent, raise minimum wage, refuse cooperation with the federal immigration enforcement, so ICE. The big question, will the new socialist guard energize the base? Because what I'm getting people when they come out meeting with Mamdani and other people, Jessica Tarloff, go, wow, look at his energy. Okay, look at his energy. So he's got energy. He's 33 years old. He's got energy. What else is he doing? He's got energy. He's a socialist. I mean, does he stand for anything? The guy's got energy. I mean, I know Westmore's got some problems, and I think that he's not been a strong governor. But if you have a guy that came from nowhere, served in the military, rises up through the academy, and then becomes a governor, I think that's a story. He's probably got great energy, too. But he doesn't have to run down capitalism, be against Israel, against Jews in America, marching against on October 8th, one day after the attack on October 7th against Israel, attacking in Gaza, which hadn't even happened yet, and then gets tossed out protesting with Tom Homan up in Albany, New York, when Tom Homan went up there to say, I need some cooperation when it comes to ICE, let me prove my case. This assemblyman shows up and starts screaming like a lunatic. That's when you saw Tom Homan eating an apple, just staring at him. When we come back, Lieutenant General Walt Piatt will be joining us, the Wounded Warrior Project CEO. You listen to the Brian Kilmeade Show. So glad you're here.
I'm Janice Dean. Join me every Sunday as I focus on stories of hope and people who are truly rays of sunshine in their community and across the world.
Listen and follow now at foxnewspodcast.com.
He's so busy, he'll make your head spin. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Sponsored by Prevagen. Prevagen, made for your brain.
So, Lieutenant General Walt Piatt is in studio. He's the Wounded Warrior Project CEO. Big day tomorrow. We have the Soldier Ride, which really started with Tony Snow, and this radio show, which I ended up taking over because he went to the White House, and now it's getting bigger than ever. They're going to be heading out all the way to the Hamptons. If you don't know New York, no, it's about 60 miles, so there'll be a few stops, and it's not going to be easy. General, welcome back.
Well, thanks for having me. Good to be back in New York.
Yeah, so tell me how the Wounded Warrior Project's doing.
Oh, we're doing really good. I mean, sadly, there's still a big need out there. Many warriors and their families are suffering from, you know, their impacts of their in their life of military service. As I said, most young men and women, you know, they have to unfortunately accept the end of the life they thought they were going to have and embrace a life they didn't think was possible. And we're there to help them. We're there to help them get in a new path of life of hope and renewed purpose and get physically and mentally strong and bring every warrior home, mind, body, and soul.
And when you talk about the issue now, it's no longer two hot wars going on at once, and who knows what other conflicts happening in Africa. You have things to settle down. So we're seeing the aftermath of that. How many people are enrolled with the Wounded Warrior Project?
We're almost at 300,000 now. We bring in about 25,000 a year. We're trying to get that number more because so many men and women have served since 9/11 in uniform. So I think the need is greater than what we have registered. So we're constantly looking out for warriors. And I tell every community, if you know a veteran that served after 9/11 and needs help, you know, we'll get them the help, or we'll get them to the place that they
need. What kind of help do they need?
Mostly, I think, first off, it's normally just filing their claim with Veterans Affairs. It's a difficult process. And for any warrior, especially if they got a traumatic brain injury or any type of injury, it's hard to do. We help them with that. It's kind of our initial handshake so they know you're not connected. You are special. You're a veteran. Your nation cares about you. We care about you. And then we help them with financial planning, Warriors to Work program, help them get a job. But a big range of our programs have to deal with mental health, the invisible wounds of war. And we have a lot of things, and this soldier ride is one of them. You know, it looks like we're riding bicycles, but it's really movement towards healing. It's getting everyone outside, reconnecting, mm-hmm. getting them in a beautiful place like New York City. When you should see what the city does for us, you know your nation appreciates your service, and that helps the warrior feel appreciated and helps the warrior come home.
How do you feel about with Marcus Luttrell and his brother and Governor Perry of Texas talking about psychedelics and dealing with the psychology of coming back from war? They're claiming that it's unbelievably successful.
We're actually backing some research on it as well with MDMA, and there's other treatments. We're following the science. So we have a warrior care network. We leverage academic universities across the country, from UMass in Boston to Emory in Atlanta, Rush in Chicago, UCLA in California. And we're allowing the world's best scientists to research this. So we want to follow the science, and the data will show. I believe there's hope for it. And it will be, you'll know the exact doses. It'll be made. You'll know where it's made. It'll be treated by, you know, a trained physician that will apply it. Anything that is showing promise, we need to continue to research, especially because PTSD is treatable. We do a wide range of programs that help it, and you help a warrior deal with it. If there are better ways, and there will be, we need to follow the science, do the research, especially too with traumatic brain injury. That's where we don't know enough. PTSD we've been doing for several years now, so we're learning a lot more. But with traumatic brain injuries, we don't know. There's still much more we need to know and what are the best treatments. Then when we find those treatments, Brian, and I'm hoping we will. I'm optimistic that we will, and I think MDMA will have a part.
MDMA?
Well, it's for the psychedelics that you're talking about. So it's a drug. But it's not something where a warrior is going in a room and they're getting high from it. It's not that at all. It's clinically administered with other evidence-based therapies so we can help the warrior, you know, unleash these memories that they're having. And it's showing promise in research. So I think once the science is there, our nation will make good decisions. Then it'll be hard to scale it because I think the numbers are greater than we think. And it's not just veterans. It's first responders. It's a lot of people in an auto accident. They've been through trauma. They're suffering from post-traumatic trauma, and they need help.
So will you focus on the people that serve, though? I know that Tunnel to Towers expanded, and they're starting to do first responders. That's not your focus.
No, we're 9/11. We're post-9/11, and that was really because veterans, but their family members as well. Because when a warrior comes back and he or she is suffering from injuries of war, the whole family suffers. The children suffer, the spouse, the extended family. So we have a family support member. My wife is a family support member. She's actually on one of our programs right now in Colorado. She was doing stand-up boarding yesterday. Is out doing physical activities and learning. So the families are a big part. But I'm a big fan of Tunnels to Towers, too, because first responders, you know, they're able to help many that need help, especially with homelessness of veterans and first responders. You know, people who serve this great country should not be left homeless. You know, that's just not the way America shows their appreciation. And I think Tunnels for Towers, other programs out there that help our veterans and our other first responders and other people in need, you know, God bless them for doing so.
How did the Afghanistan withdrawal affect the men and women that served?
I think there was great anxiety. I was still serving in the Pentagon at that time. What I tell our friends that I've served with, that You know, our nation committed a lot there, and there was many successes that we'll probably never know. Many terrorist networks that never were able to attack us because of our time in Afghanistan. Mm-hmm. Policy decisions are what they are, and military executes them. But I think a lot of warriors were left and families with questions. I think it created anxiety, and they just needed help. And it allowed us to help them deal with other things they were dealing with. It wasn't necessarily the withdrawal. It was probably the withdrawal that triggered other issues that they experienced in Afghanistan that they never dealt with. So I think it, in some way, probably helped with awareness and got people to seek help because of the things and the hard service they went through while serving in Afghanistan.
So, and then Soldier Ride tomorrow, how is it going to lay out?
No, it's going to be great. We're starting right here, right downstairs. So 48th thanks
and
again.
6th in Midtown Manhattan.
Yeah, so thanks for having us again. And then we'll ride to Coney Island, so 20-plus miles tomorrow. And then day two will be in Babylon, day three in the Hamptons. It really originated out in the Hamptons. So for us, it's the power of movement. It's the healing power, you know. So we're going to ride together. We have warriors showing up today, getting fitted. Many of them yesterday probably thought about not coming because they're full of anxiety. And it happens every time. So they'll be very nervous tonight. They'll be very nervous tomorrow. But after about midday, especially when we get to Coney Island, they'll all be smiling. They'll be hugging one another. Then they'll start telling stories. We'll probably be crying and smiling by day two. So it really is not about the physical activity of riding a bicycle for 3 days in this beautiful state, Long Island. It's really about the power of movement and healing and coming together and that connection that this particular soldier ride offers them.
How do you feel about the Pentagon's new rules where they're trying to make men and women and bring up the standards a little bit and get the political correctness out? Have you felt the ripple effect downrange?
I did not. Well, in my time in service, I did a lot to promote access to women in what we would call combat arms. So I was the chief of infantry at one time, and we wanted women to get into Ranger school. As a matter of fact, the story from former Medal of Honor recipient, the late Colonel Ralph Puckett, he built Ranger school for the Army. It's one of the toughest schools the Army has, but it was for men only. And when we were asked to explore how do we put women, integrate women into Ranger school, Ralph was the first guy I called. And I said, sir, I'm going to need your help because we got to do this. We need women to get this training.
Without lowering the standards because it puts people's lives at risk.
Right. And he said, I'll never forget it because he said, Walt, he said, it's about time. But we never lowered the standards. I mean, that school's hard no matter. It was hard when I went through it. And it's hard for everybody. So I got to see that women in uniform, when given the opportunity to compete in a fair level of playing, they will excel. They will do things just like any athlete will. Some athletes are faster, bigger, stronger. And I think what they wanted was just to be treated fairly and be given an opportunity to serve in some branches that were formerly, you know, prohibited from serving just because of their gender. I think the military gets it right. It's like an NFL football team. You either can block or run or you can't. So in the military, you either can shoot or you can't. Now, we just measure the outcome. You've got to perform to the high standards our military demands. And I think demanding high standards is what the Army's always done for 250 years, and I think they're going to continue to do it. That's why we're the best.
And the numbers show, General, that the recruiting's gone up on almost every branch. Anecdotally, or whether you saw the numbers, do you get that sense?
Yes, I do. It's hard to say.
Unemployment's at 4%. Usually they say economic strife leads a lot of people to the military insurgency, but we don't have an uneven economic situation.
Right. I don't know if we ever get it right. When people say a lot of things like that, like what's impact. I don't know if we get it. I think there's still a desire to serve. And I see young people in this country today, and I think they get a bad rap. Like they said, they're lazy, they're not physically active, but I think they want to serve more than they want to, you know, be paid. They want to serve. We get that in our organization. People maybe not signing up for the military, but they want to come work for Wounded Warrior Project because they want to give to something greater than themselves. And I think the military always attracts that.
Right.
And we get you know, great citizens from this country to put their hand up.
Did you go through the academy?
I did not. I was enlisted first. So I came in as a private. I went to a small college in Pennsylvania, and with the full after I got out as a sergeant, I was very proud of my enlisted time. I loved it. I joined because, you know, my father was in World War II. Most of my teachers and high school coaches all served. I thought that's what you did. You got out of high school, you joined the military service, you got out, you went back and taught school and coached football. You know, that was my dream.
Right.
Didn't work out so well, but 42 years later, you know, I hung it up. But I just love our military because they're just so full of people that are there for the right reasons. They just want to give.
I hear you. So Lieutenant General Walter Pyatt, thanks so much. If you people want to give to the Wounded Warrior Project or be part of it, what do they do?
WoundedWarriorProject.com, WoundedWarriorProject.org. Come donate and or sign up for our services, and we have ways for many people to volunteer. You'll see it at Soldier Ride now. You'll see the communities come out tomorrow and at Babylon and at Hamptons. They just want to come out and say thank you. They'll ride along with us. Every little bit helps because it shows a warrior they're appreciated and that their country cares about.
All right. Thanks so much, General. Great to see you again.
Thank you, sir.
Back in a moment.
You're with Brian Kilmeade.
It is time to take the quiz.
It's five questions in less than 5 minutes. We ask people on the streets of New York City to play along. Let's see how you do.
Take the quiz every day at thequiz.fox. Then come back here to see how you did.
Thank you for taking the quiz.
Information you want, truth you demand. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Let's welcome tonight's guest. He now owns a soccer team, making him even more boring. Host of Fox and Friends in One Nation, Brian Kilmeade.
Brian, I know this is hard for you to kind of imagine because no one ever asks you for your signature. What do you think is going on with the auto pen, and can this be undone?
Here's a question. What did he actually do? And it brings me to you.
Yes.
Because people look at your monologue and they say it's so funny, it's so insightful, it's so you. Oh, but no one's ever seen you in the writing room. No one's ever seen you on a conference call. We see you in the hall. You're not funny. There is some scandal here that has yet to bubble up. And that's why I think you're so aggressively pursuing the auto pen story. That's my story.
How dare he? I think we know why Steve Ducey moved to Florida.
It's pretty funny, right?
Yeah, just a little bit of the chaos of last night.
Yes, it was chaotic. It was Kennedy. It was Adam.
Adam Hunter,
Emily Campagno. And together, Emily is going to be interesting because Emily told me she's got a live show. So I said, Emily, what are you going to be doing? And she said, well, I tell the story of my book because I got this. All my family's been in the military and the book's read military. And I also play air guitar. And I'm going to have an air guitar contest with the audience. And I go, really? She goes, I love air guitar. So that is going to be very interesting. It's going to be in New Jersey. We were in New Jersey. We did History, Liberty, and Laughs there. Great crowd, great facility.
She has a lot of random interests.
I know.
That's fantastic.
She's a cheerleader, lawyer.
Yes, loves cars. Yeah, working out.
Deltoids.
Yeah, good arms.
Yeah, good arms, yeah. Not that that matters. I don't think you need good arms to be successful in television, do you think?
You don't, but it helps. It's a good talking point because everyone's like, wow, look how cut her arms are.
Right.
What does she do?
But
I want her workout.
It helps. If you have good arms and you're a woman, it's a lot easier. Like if you're a guy and you have good arms and you're like, why does he never wear sleeves? Like, no one ever looks at a woman with good arms and go, why doesn't she wear sleeves?
It's true. Why doesn't she wear sleeves? You're right, but I feel like it's also expected that guys should have good arms.
You think so? You think it's expected? Tell it to David Hogg.
Yeah. I do also think, off topic, sort of, good arms is partially genetic. Whether you can be that cut up or not. Like, some people
just get cut easily.
Cut up, yeah. But others, you know, can still be in shape and just might not be as cut.
But I agree with that.
Speaking of other talents, Kennedy also did a mean James Carville impression on Gutfeld.
So it's a failure to communicate. The Democrat Party is being taken over by a man called Mom Donnie, and that it needs to come home so those chickens can roost.
Kilmeade, you're familiar with being in a fetal position. Is this good advice for Democrats? And to Emily's point, and who is he talking to?
I'm not really sure. Also, James
Carville. I own a soccer team. I can make fun of people.
Go ahead.
Host is supposed to be nice. They asked to come over, and it's like, for the record, your accent was more Gone with the Wind than James Carville. I didn't know what era I was in. Which, by the way, they colorized Gone with the Wind. It ruined everything.
Ah, yeah, you hate color.
But... okay.
What does that even mean?
Back to our...
I don't know.
So there you go. I'm not sure what that show was about last night.
It was very fun. You guys were all over the place, which has made these cuts a little hard. But you... I mean, the criticizing of Kennedy's accent, is that a new...
Who was
thing
I right?
Resume?
Because what is he? She's kind of doing like a formal Southern gentleman.
That's fair.
But James Carville is not a Southern gentleman.
But he is Southern.
He's Cajun. Like a raw, working class, uneducated.
Curses a lot.
Does unkept. I mean, sweatshirt.
I mean, how unkept? He's like bald. You can't be that unkept when you're bald, right?
Well, that's the only thing that stops him from being totally out of control. I mean, is the fact he has no hair, is what you're saying. So that's pretty much what's going on. What else can I tell you that I find somewhat controversial? How about Charlemagne the God? Talking about Barack Obama, cut 41.
It's mind-boggling to me when I hear people like President Obama say things that regular, everyday people been saying for years. We've been saying Democrats were cowards for a decade. We've been saying Democrats need to toughen up. And that cowardice is, why we're in the position that we're in now. So it's just wild to hear President Obama say that now, as if Democrats haven't been cowards for the past decade.
Yeah, I don't know what he's... I don't know what you mean by cowards. I mean, you just have better ideas. Do you think that Bill Clinton was courageous? Bill Clinton was courageous. That's why he won. Or Barack Obama was courageous to take on Hillary Clinton, but just ran on a bunch of issues, better candidate than John McCain and wins. I think that you can go back to doing that and go just being the guy. Okay, what are you going to do on immigration? Admit what John Kerry and Bernie Sanders said. They said, we have to build up the border. We're not a country without a border. So you sucked it up and you admitted you were wrong in your own sweet way. Now, what are you going to do for the economy? How are you going to fuel it? You're going to give more money to other people, or are you going to have innovative ideas how to stay up with China at the same time, stay competitive and embracing capitalistic principles while still doing that so-called having a big heart for those who don't have enough? Newt Gingrich weighed in last night, and he talked about how what really Mark Cuban has been saying about Democrats. Cut 38.
The Democrats, I think, have trapped into two things. One is they hate Trump so much that they're incoherent and they run in circles and do stupid things. And then second, they have moved even further to the left. I mean, Mandami, as a Uganda-born Indian-American who is a genuine Marxist, who says stupid things like, he doesn't like billionaires. Well, who's he going to tax to get the money for all of his free goodies? Because the billionaires are all going to leave. And you watch Mandami, you think, this is a man who is going to turn New York into Caracas. I think for the country, that's the future of the Democratic Party.
It's so true. Go to BrianKilmeade.com. I want to see you on the 23rd of August, History, Liberty, and Laughs, as well as the 27th in Richmond, Virginia. Don't move. Brian Kilmeade Show.
This is Jason Chaffetz from the Jason in the House podcast. Join me every Monday to dive deeper into the latest political headlines and chat with remarkable guests.
Listen and follow now at foxnewspodcast.com
or wherever you download podcasts.
From the Fox News radio studios in Midtown Manhattan, it's the fastest growing radio talk show, Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the latest moments of the Brian Kilmeade Show. So glad you're here. I come to you from Midtown Manhattan, where it's kind of hot and muggy, but it's okay. It's cold summer, but heard around the country and around the world. Charles Gasparino is going to be with us at the bottom of the hour. Charles does great reporting on inside business, but also on this whole mayoral race and the meeting of business leaders and the socialist Marxist, called by Jamie Dimon, a Marxist. So, and Britt Hume standing by to bring us inside politics and inside Washington. So let's get to the big three.
Number three.
We just made a deal today, a big one with Indonesia. They've opened up Indonesia fully. You know, Indonesia really has great copper, very, very powerful copper, but they have a lot of things, and we have full access to Indonesia.
Wow. That is the President of the United States talking about making another deal. Just three. I think a lot will be coming down shortly, but inflation is not tame. Trade, tech, and deregulation, though, I think, has the economy ready to boom. Let's discuss it.
Number two.
Really excited for the Democratic nominee, Zohra Mamdani. I think a lot of people just need to get to know folks before they issue an endorsement, and I hope that this conversation can be constructive to bringing the party together and rallying behind our nominee.
Well, that is AOC, and her protege won the Democratic primary, and that's the end of the good news for Democrats. Zohra Mamdani, the socialist who doesn't like capitalism and billionaires should be banned and defund the police, that's your guy. Is it your party?
Number one.
The Department of Homeland Security is blaming Democratic politicians for a spike in recent assaults on U.S. Immigration and Customs officers. DHS Secretary Kristi Noem directing her ire at California Governor Gavin Newsom.
Yep, Lucas Thomason weighing in. Stunning success. That's the only way to characterize the sealing of both our borders and ICE as Dems fight it out in almost every way against the officials trying to scoop up illegal alien criminals and others. Britt Hume joins us now. Hey, Britt.
Hi, Brian. How you doing, buddy?
Good. First off, the breakfast, I don't have many details. I'm doing the show simultaneously, but it looks like Mamdani was in D.C. to try to win over some Democrats, but yet he doesn't back off of any of his statements and beliefs except for globalizing intifada, which he says that he likes the idea but won't use the term. Is this guy just an isolated challenge for Democrats, or is it a symptom of something bigger?
I think it's a symptom of something bigger. It's kind of an extreme example of the drift of the Democratic Party over the last several decades. They have moved left. It's arguable that the Republican Party has moved right, but the Democratic Party has moved farther left than the Republican Party has right. And now we have this likely winner of the mayoral race in New York, whose views are simply way out of step with the majority of Americans.
But there's other disciples. For example, there's a socialist running for the vacant seat in Michigan. There's another run for Congress in Minnesota. There's another one that ran for the vacant seat in Arizona, wasn't successful. But you see this bubbling up, and it reminds me of David Hogg, the now ousted deputy chief of the DNC.
Yeah, I can understand that, Brian. I think what we're seeing here with this is that there are certain bad ideas that won't go away. And socialism and communism are bad ideas. They don't work. They've caused no end of trouble and sorrow in the world. And yet there are still people who adhere to them and think that they've never been properly tried.
I guess so. So we'll see what happens. They're trying to win over some people. But don't you think it's definitely an important point that Schumer, Jeffries, Governor Hochul, any type of leadership, Dan Goldman, Jewish Democrat from New York, no one's endorsed this guy? I mean, what are they going to do? He's likely to become the mayor. Yeah, I mean, we've seen a lot of different things over the last 20 years. But do you see momentum getting behind a disgrace Cuomo or a rehab Derek Adams?
Well, it's remarkable what people will do when, you know, the only alternative is somebody you like almost as little as you like the one you're trying to beat. And in this case, a lot of people look at this race and they say, well, as bad as Andrew Cuomo is, or as weak as Eric Adams is, I'd rather have him than this guy.
Here's what President Trump said. Cut six.
I think this, if the three people would combine into one, they would easily win. I don't know if they're smart enough to do that. But if you break up the vote, you know, it's going to be, I think, virtually impossible. It's actually very dangerous. The good news, I can control it from Washington because we're the ones that issue the money. And if we see somebody's destroying the city, we're not going to let that happen.
He really can't control it from Washington. He could do some stuff. But to have a constant battle in New York, it's just very interesting because these business leaders don't want any part of it. But, Britt, I like to talk about what's happening with the divide in the Republican Party. How would you characterize what's happening with this brewing situation with Epstein and how certain elements of the Republican Party, the MAGA movement, won't let it go, and the president wants to give it the Heisman?
My view of that is that the most remarkable thing about that story is how unserious it is. I mean, this is a story. The Epstein story is remarkably inconsequential. We're in a situation where across the world there are trouble spots, wars being fought, some of them won, some of them trouble. We got major major policy enactments at home. We've got, you know, worries about the economy. We've got all of this. And we got some guy who didn't matter much when he was alive, and now he's been dead for, what, 6 years now, and people are still talking about him.
I agree. And I agree with you, Britt. And Martha McCallum and I were talking about this yesterday, and I am name-dropping to impress you. And we're basically the only three. Oh, everybody else is like, wow, this is a bigger deal. You don't really understand. My thing is, I watched Dan Bongino sit on a couch and say he killed himself and there is no list. And then I watched Kash Patel say the same thing. And this leading journalist in Miami that blew up the whole story was on another channel yesterday, and I'm watching it. And she said there is no list. There was a logbook of phone numbers that this guy had, but there was no list. So at one point, do you think that this is all about clicks for people that make their living in social media?
Well, it is to some extent, Brian. Look, I think the way to look at it is this. So before they got into office, Dan Bongino and Pam Bondi and, to a lesser extent, Kash Patel were making hay on this question.
Yep.
And talking about how they were suspicious, they didn't believe the official story that that he killed himself, and there's got to be more to it, and his client list is being protected. And I think that they earnestly believed that there was a client list and probably much more to it. Then they got into office and had access to the material, and they wouldn't find anything. Now, it's a very embarrassing situation for them, having made such a to-do about it before they got into office, to find when they got there that there wasn't anything to it. So what's makes sense to me is that the reason they're saying there wasn't anything to it is there isn't anything to it because of the people who were involved were so out on a limb about this that it makes no sense that they would cover it up once they got into power, having been screaming about a cover-up before they got into power. So my feeling about this is it just isn't plausible that those three would lie now about what they found. It just is not plausible.
And I'll tell you personally, Dan Bongino said to me off camera what he said on camera. Oh, yeah, he killed himself. And, you know, I found out. It's just no question. It was just, you know what it's like when someone's body language and you know them for a while, they just say, Brian, there's nothing there. And I just say, okay, case closed. Because I wasn't really following the case that close either. But you know who feels like we do? President Trump.
I don't.
President Trump.
Yeah, he
does not get it.
Well, he hates this story, and with good reason. Because it's an unimportant story. It's embarrassing to him that he's got these people working for him who climbed out on this limb, and the limb has now been sawed off by reality. So I think, you know, I'm sure he'd like it to go away, and I don't blame him. I mean, he makes the same point that I've been making, which is this thing doesn't matter. It doesn't matter in any large scheme of things that you can imagine unless you want to believe that there's this big deep state cover-up that implicates all kinds of important people and that even people who were most suspicious are now involved in the cover-up. I'm sorry, I don't buy it.
So, Britt, I just can't wait to get your opinion on this. I mean, when I differ from the president, I think Ukraine are the good guys, and I thought it's worth giving them everything they need to be successful. President Trump didn't run on that. And I always thought that Iran can't be dealt with, and we have to take out that nuclear program on their own. President said no Middle East wars. But he gets behind the Resolute desk. He looks at options. He has five rounds of talks, and he goes, I'm going to have to take out the nuclear program myself. And then after trying to deal with Vladimir Putin, he said, I'd end it in a day. He goes, not the same guy. I'm going to give them Patriots. I'm working with NATO to get them more weapons. To me, that's great leadership. To certain elements of the party, it's a letdown. He's not doing what he said. How do you view it?
I view it as you do, Brian. I think that it's a cause that should be supported. And Vladimir Putin made, in my judgment, a terrible blunder when he went charging into Ukraine and the belief that he could have Ukraine in a matter of days. It didn't work out. The Ukrainians have turned out to be vastly more resilient than he ever imagined. They've been very brave, as the president has now said. And the only way this can work out for him is if he just attacks civilians. These are war crimes, by the way, and simply bludgeons his way through this war. which I don't think he can do if Ukraine is properly supported by the United States and its allies. And Putin needs to be made to pay for his mistake. If it works out for him, that's bad news for everybody else, in my view. And we don't want another example of the United States pulling the plug on an ally and having the bad guys win and having the signal that that would send to Beijing and elsewhere that the United States is weak and won't fight or won't at least support allies who are fighting.
So the president said, I'm going to give him 50 days. I might go less than 50 days. But I also thought it was interesting that Lavrov was asked about the change in tone by the president. He's, you know, a longtime serving foreign minister. Cut 29.
It used to be 24 hours, and it was 100 days. We've all been through this. We already have an unprecedented number of sanctions declared against us, and we are coping. I have no doubt that we will cope.
But here's the difference. We're going to hit the people that are buying their cheap oil and gas, and that's Brazil, India, and China. That's the difference.
Yeah, that's a big difference. Now, it would cause major disruptions in the world. It might even lead to increases in the prices of fuel, gasoline, and the rest. But it would punish the hell out of Russia. And I think the president really wants to make peace in the world. And I think he was fooled by Putin, conned, played into believing that Putin wanted peace. Putin doesn't want peace. Putin wants victory, triumph, conquest. And the president is now in a place he did not want to be. He didn't want to escalate this war with weapons and sanctions. He didn't want to do that. And he thought Putin was somebody he could count on and do business with, and that turns out not to be true, and it calls for a different policy. And I think he's, you know, so far shown that he's willing to make a change. It's no guarantee it's going to work out. It isn't going to be easy. Putin is as evil as they come and utterly determined.
Absolutely. And lastly, Ken Langone was not for President Trump for the second term. And he is one of the most successful businessmen in the country and one of the greatest guys you're going to meet. He's the co-founder of Home Depot. But he's been watching what's happened over the last 6 months. And I just want to share you this. This is what he said on CNBC. Let's listen.
I am sold on Trump. In fact, I'll say this. I think he's got a good shot at going down in history as one of our best presidents ever.
That is a real turnaround because you didn't want to vote for him.
Well, I tell you the reason. I want to tell you, I'm a believer. What I'm seeing happening is absolutely nothing short of a great thing. People are walking with more bounce than they are. It's all around. Knowledge implies one thing. When you made a mistake, admit it. One of the pilots on that miraculous trip to Iran that we wiped out, whatever the hell we wiped out, he said, you're the only guy that in the presidency that would have done what you did. One of the pilots said that.
Yeah.
And you know what? He's probably right.
So from reporter Britt Hume to analyst Britt Hume, do you understand where Ken Langone is coming from?
I absolutely do, Brian, and I'm rooting for this president to succeed. He's got a lot of irons in the fire, and he seems prepared at any given moment to add more. He's got a lot up in the air. So the question arises, you know, how will this stuff all end up? And that will determine whether the idea that he could go down as a great president will come to pass. But I hope it does. And I hope it works out because he's doing a lot of things that need doing.
And I love the fact that he loves the country, going to celebrate our past. So year 250 will be like 1976 and not 1619. It'll be a celebration of America this next year. Britt, thanks so much. I appreciate it.
Always good to talk to you, Brian. Thank you.
The great Britt Hume, 1-866-408-7669.
This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
From the Fox News Podcasts Network.
Hey there, it's me, Kennedy. Make sure to check out my podcast, Kennedy Saves the World. It is 5 days a week, every week. Download and listen at foxnewspodcast.com or wherever you listen to your favorite podcast.
From his mouth to your ears, it's Brian Kilmeade.
Really love to go. I mean, I look forward to meeting them both. I know them both very well through what I read and
through what I see, look, he's a communist. I don't think our country is ready for a communist, but we're going to see. And I don't think that race is over yet either. You do have a couple of people running against, and it'll be an interesting thing. Things are coming out about him which aren't good.
And that is President Trump. And this is what makes it so cool, is that I literally have, when I got here in the morning, you know, I'm up at 2:30, I'm looking at the notes at 3 in the morning. I literally have from President Trump, him weighing in on 5 separate topics. Literally 5 separate topics, because he'll come out and talk by the chopper. You heard the background. Then he'll come out and talk after his event tech. And then he'll give an interview with Alexis McAdams. So I got that sound. And do you understand that we never would get this ever? And what Britt Hume was just alluding to, he goes, I really want this president to be successful. And the thing is, he's working. He's got his hands in tech, in crypto, the big, beautiful bill, in Iran, with Hamas, with Russia, trying to got Azerbaijan and one of the stands, I think. You know, he's everywhere trying to work things out, and he's looking to expand his swath. And that's what gets you so intrigued. I mean, literally, I have 3 major topics to handle on a daily. I try to knock it down to 3, and literally you can go 6. And you have Trump weighing in on just about all of them. I mean, the one with, as I mentioned, with Britt Hume, that he has no interest in, is the Epstein file. I think he, and like me, and I'm one of the few, I guess, I was shocked it became that big of a deal. But in meeting and seeing so many of his team on Sunday at the soccer game, I think his team realizes they have to handle it. And I think one way to handle it would be get a Trump person that they trust, that's not in the government yet, whether it's Rick Grenell or somebody else who's kind of in the government but doesn't have a set position, and say, I think he should be a lawyer, or she. Should be a lawyer, like Jean Prior. Say, look through it. See what you got. Outside. See what you got. Who's unafraid to tick people off, or the so-called who envision themselves as part of the MAGA movement. Listen to the Brian Kilmeade Show. Charles Gasparino, one of the best in the business at business, is going to break down what happened yesterday with the Mamdani meeting in New York City, as well as our economy, inflation, and so much more.
Fox News Audio presents Unsolved with James Patterson. Every crime tells a story, but some stories are left unfinished.
Somebody knows.
Real cases, real people. Listen and follow now at foxtruecrime.com.
A talk show that's real. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Really excited for the Democratic nominees, or Sohrab Mamdani, to be here in Washington, is to really, you know, experience and have people see him face to face and kick the tires, you know, themselves, and hear what he has to say about making New York affordable for working people. I think a lot of people just need to get to know folks before they issue an endorsement, and I hope that this conversation can be constructive to bringing the party together and rallying behind our nominee.
So we got Charles Gasparino coming up shortly, and one of this nation's premier business talents who's got better contacts than just about anyone you know. That's why he breaks so much news. People trust him, and he understands it. But what I don't think that she understands is people need to get to know him. It's not a matter of that. I hear he's charming. In fact, Mike Lowell was telling me that he hung out with him when they were both in Albany, and they knew he was a socialist. He goes, we played poker a few times together. I'm sure he's a good guy. I'm sure he's fun to talk to. I'm not saying he doesn't have a great smile and great energy and is not creative on social media. I don't care about that. But I'll take the other one. I'll say, what do you stand for? What will you do? What do you want to accomplish? And how do you want to do it? That's what I care about. I don't care about get to know him. He's a nice guy who doesn't like capitalism, doesn't like the cops, seems to be from a family of jihadists. So don't really go for that. The other big story that's happening today is Anthony Burnell, who is the chief of staff of the First Lady. They said was really running things in the Biden administration, went behind closed doors. And James Comer now meeting with the press, backed by Byron Donalds, and said that Anthony Burnell refused to answer any questions. So let me see. When asked about the cognitive decline of President Biden, his doctor took the Fifth. when asked about why didn't you give a prostate exam, the doctor took the fifth. When they asked, did he was he up for the job, the doctor took the fifth. And now you have the chief of staff refusing to answer questions behind closed doors. I guess you could hold him. I don't know. Can you hold him in contempt? That might be an interesting question. If you just refuse to answer questions and you're under oath, I mean, you could take the fifth, I guess. But now Burnell, all these people are just going to stonewall unless you can have one flip and then show that the other one's lying. Remember, Steve Bannon went to jail. Roger Stone went to jail because they refused to cooperate with the subpoena, answer the subpoena. They actually put him in jail. This guy shows up, doesn't answer any questions. I don't know what the difference is. I really don't. But with Joe Biden's situation, flat out every day that you're talking about Joe Biden and the Democrats, they're losing. They know it. I feel that they're eventually going to get to believing that Kamala Harris is the same way, because when you bring her up, you could think of a loss, and then you think of ineptness, and you think about the lawsuit with 60 Minutes. Why did they get it? Because she couldn't answer a simple question about would you ever stand up to, do you ever tell Prime Minister Netanyahu no, or whatever the question was. Her answer was so ridiculous that they edited it, made it crisper, and that was the lawsuit that cost him $15 million and went to Trump's library. I think it's eventually going to get to that. So when Joe Biden's in the news and his presidency's in the news on the front page of the New York Times earlier, I think it makes them look absolutely horrible because it reminds them of what it was like when he was in charge. Joining us now is Charles Gasparino, Fox Business senior correspondent. Charles, welcome back.
Thanks for having me, Brian.
Hey, first off, how would you characterize Zamdani meets the business leaders of New York City yesterday?
A yawn. I think most of the top business leaders did not show. None of the Wall Street guys showed. I mean, Jamie Dimon wasn't there. Steve Schwarzman wasn't there. Larry Fink wasn't there. They were all no-shows. I mean, that's a huge part of the city's economy, particularly Manhattan. For them not to show and to have the guy from Pfizer show up just shows you a few things. I mean, there's a degree of apathy. It also shows you that, you know, Brian, this has been going on and in an accelerated manner since 2020, but going on before that when comrade Bill de Blasio was the mayor and started introducing socialism to the city and defunding the police. I mean, you have an exodus of business out of the city. So, you know, who's left isn't that important. I mean, Jamie Dimon has been moving operations out of New York. So has Goldman Sachs. David Solomon, by the way, the CEO of Goldman, wasn't there either. And, you know, Mondami, if he is elected, will accelerate that. These are firms that are starting to look at New York as a rounding error on their balance sheet. And, you know, that's not good for the city economy. It's not good for anybody. But, you know, it just shows you that, you know, have money will travel. If you tell the business community we're going to defund the police, we're going to, you know, socialize and take wealth away from people, we don't want billionaires. You know, they're going to move. Okay.
So where are they going?
Dallas. Do you ever see the suburbs of Dallas right now?
Yeah.
They are booming.
Yeah.
And booming. Booming. They're going to Miami. They're going to Nashville. They're going to places that are welcoming them and saying, we're not going to tax the hell out of you. We're going to have police that enforce the law. And, you know, we're not going to treat you as the enemy. We should point out that let's just say Zohan Mandami doesn't win. Let's just say Eric Adams wins, or just say Andrew Cuomo wins. Do you think the political trajectory of New York, which is where all these companies are now domiciled, but probably soon won't be, and even if they're domiciled now, they move stuff over, they move stuff out. Do you think things will be that much different? I mean, what we have right now in New York, and you have the same thing with California, and tech is grappling with this as well, is state governments that are so one-party governments that are so skewed to the left that it just places enormous burdens on them and their workers to live there. You know, that's why people are moving out of California. It's why people, you know, New York has had tremendous out-migration of people and jobs. It just is what it is. And it makes running the welfare state here much more unaffordable. I mean, you know, if you start projecting this out, you are talking that, you know, a fiscal calamity that could come in the next 10 years if this type of government keeps getting elected in New York.
I know. Let alone the crime.
And by the way, and I don't see Mondami losing, changing that. I mean, one of the things that struck me about Andrew Cuomo, you know, he gave an interview, I think, with New York Magazine, is that he started parroting some of the weird stuff of Mondami. He talked about too many billionaires, unless I'm misquoting him. I'm going to go back and recheck that quote. But, I mean, why would you go there? I mean, it's the Democratic Party, the leadership, has been cowered by the far left so much that they're actually adopting their slogans and their policies almost to the T. I mean, remember, you know, Mondami's talking about socializing grocery stores. You know, what Kamala Harris proposed during the campaign against Trump, which thank God she lost, wasn't all that much different. She was talking about price controls on groceries.
So I just want you to hear, the president was asked about this yesterday by Alexis. Cut four.
Another person that was meeting with business leaders today was Zohran Mamdani. I know you talk a lot about him. People didn't really know who he was not too long ago. His name's out there a lot. He kind of was able to make something happen in New York. He's going to meet with AOC. He's coming to Washington, D.C. Is that the future of the Democratic Party there?
I tend to doubt it. Look, you know, I think he's got a somewhat slightly different viewpoint on business and life than I do. I think you have two of the very great opposites. I have to wish him well. It's sort of lightning in a bottle. Let's see what happens.
He thinks he's going to be great for the Republican Party. Terrible. He thinks he can come in and affect things in New York. But it's definitely going to be a struggle trying to affect a mayor as from Washington, D.C., Charles.
You know, I think Trump, as he should, looks at this as a political positive. The more you can paint the Democratic Party as the party of weirdos like Mondami and AOC and Bernie Sanders, when it really comes down to it, they have weird positions. They're weird. I mean, I remember they tried to get away with saying J.D. Vance because he's married and has two kids is weird. Do you remember that whole that whole thing they tried to push during the campaign? I mean, the real weirdos are people like Mandami who post sketches of people breakdancing to anti-Semitic breakdancing and stuff like that. I mean, it's just – and AOC who just, you know, is probably the least, you know, competent policy person in Congress right now. You just listen to her talk for 5 minutes and you'll know what I'm talking about. So, you know, Trump actually benefits by having Mondami running, you know, even though New York is in the downslope of its power and its prominence, it still is the media capital of the world, right?
Yeah, I think so.
So we work there, right? So, you know, it's good to have Mondami on TV every day talking, spewing his nonsense.
So I want to talk, Charles, can we pivot? We'll see where this game goes. And I really hope that even though it helped the president, I really hope that this guy loses. If I had my choice, Curtis Lee would be the best. But as a Republican, he's got almost a very small shot. But I would take Eric Adams, who's allied with the president and probably knows a lot more than he did 4 years ago. But, Charles, I want to talk about our economy and the trade deals. I sense by August 1st we're going to get the EU done. I sense we're going to get India done. Here's Howard Lutnick, the Commerce Secretary, cut 14.
You've got more than $15 trillion of committed investment coming into America. So we know the economy is going to be on fire. You know it. Plus, you've got the tariff revenue pouring in. So Donald Trump is feeling very, very strong. And that strength is going to show up in his trade deals. So what he said to Indonesia today was very simple. Open your whole market. And I mean, open it. No tariffs, no trade barriers. And you can only pay us 19%. Think about Donald Trump. He's opening markets for our businesses to export, and he's earning us 19% to pay down our debt. I mean, he is fixing the trade deficit point by point.
So I know Howard sells, where Scott Bessent reports almost. How do you feel about what he just said?
You know, I just don't trust anything Howard says. It's just, you know, listen, I remember he's been signaling that we have an India deal for like like 4 months now. I mean, and we have no deal, right? So, I mean, I'm sure it's going to come someday, but I mean, you know, hopefully sooner rather than later. I will just say this. If there's one weak part of the Trump economy and the Trump administration, and, you know, Trump has done like amazing things so far, I mean, on so many levels, including, you know, the big, beautiful budget, which is not really big and beautiful, but it's what we needed at, you know, for now. Right. And hopefully we can get the you know, some growth in the economy from the tax cuts and the deregulation. But when it really comes down to it, these tariffs are price increases, taxes on people that buy the goods. And he has no deals. And, you know, and that sort of uncertainty can't be good. Now, whether when all said and done, and here's what I don't know, Brian, and no one knows, you know, do the tax cuts, do the deregulation, does all the positive stuff of the Trump economy outweigh any of the negatives from these tariffs? I don't know. I mean, we saw some stuff in the recent CPI report with an uptick in inflation.
But it's not much.
It wasn't,
and it was as predicted, right? We want it closer to two, but it's closer to three.
It was a little higher. You know, it's happening. I mean, it's as predicted. People say the tariffs are going to kick in.
How do you feel about the tariff revenue that's came in, $25 billion this month?
That's good, but remember, it's static, right? It's the same analysis that Republicans and Trump yells at the CBO about, right? They say, well, if you cut taxes, the CBO says it's a deficit. It doesn't count the increased revenue that comes from the tax increases. It's the same thing with the tariffs. Trump's doing the same, playing the same game. You get the tariff revenue up front. What you don't get is if those tariffs cause other tariffs to kick in with countries taxing your goods and it leads to a decline in GDP, do they cancel each other out? I mean, these are just all issues, Brian. And to be honest with you, I can't tell you where these numbers are gonna, whether these tariffs are gonna be net positive or negative.
Charles, you know my prediction.
Anybody that does tells you they don't know. You can predict all you want, but no one knows.
I will say this. I think by August 1st, just judging by what Germany's been saying and their chancellor and how direct he is with the president and how deliberate he is with the Patriots and everything else, he told the EU last week, he said, I want this deal done. Enough. I need this deal done. And he's the most powerful.
But they've been saying that forever. I mean,
but no,
and
but
by
this
way,
is
good,
a new chancellor. But this is why I think that in India get done. Because I think the president wants the best deal, and he wants the – just like baseball and football want the trade deadline and basketball, they want the trade deadline. They want that August 1st date. So give me the best deal, wait till the last minute, brinksmanship, and pull the trigger. That's my prediction.
Do you remember that Shakespearean sonnet, tomorrow, 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 creeps in at this petty pace from day to day? That's what this is. It's always tomorrow. And it's about time we just do some stuff. And that's why it's hard to take Howard Lutnick seriously.
Yeah, you're not a fan.
No, I like him personally. I just don't, you know, just don't. No, he's a nice guy. I know him for years. I just don't trust him on this.
Charles, thanks so much. What are you working on now?
I'm going to do the Big Money Show for Fox Business in a few minutes. I'm going to write my column for the New York Post, which I do a midweek column as well. I'm covering just regular business stuff, mergers and acquisitions, and media. There's going to be some on smaller deals. I'm covering Mr. Mondami, our wonderful mayor. Is he mayor yet? Yes, he is kind of mayor right now. Yeah. I'm only kidding.
So, Charles, good luck. That's a full plate. I don't want you overdoing it. I want you to balance that out with a good cardiovascular workout.
And I'm going to lift. I'm going to go to the I'm actually going to lift today.
He's always lifting weights, this guy. Charles Gasparino, thanks so much.
All right. See you.
Got to survive in New York. He's great. Back in a moment.
It's Brian Kilmeade.
Listen to the all-new Brett Baer podcast featuring Common Ground, in-depth talks with lawmakers from opposite sides of the aisle, along with all your Brett Baer favorites like his all-star panel and much more. Available now at foxnewspodcasts.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
A radio show like no other. It's Brian Kilmeade.
It feels like you work your whole life to celebrate winning a tournament for like a few minutes. It only lasts a few minutes, that kind of euphoric feeling. You know, there's a lot of people that make it to what they thought was going to fulfill them in life, and then you get there and all of a sudden you get to number one in the world. You know, what is the point? You're like, why do I want to win this tournament so bad? That's something that I wrestle with on a daily basis. If I win, it's going to be awesome for about 2 minutes.
I don't get what Scott Scheffler was talking about. I mean, basically, I hear about that happens with the Olympics because you usually one and done unless you're the NBA. But like if you do gymnastics, you do swimming, those sports that are just basically major in America when they become Olympic sports, Olympic years. I understand the letdown. You train your whole life, you nail it, you get a perfect 10, you get your gold medal. I understand the letdown. But for Scotty Scheffler to say, I'm the best golfer in the world and it's no big deal and it's a big letdown, I don't get that.
See, I don't think he was saying I'm the best golfer and that's a letdown. He's saying winning the specific tournament.
Well, like, he is the best golfer.
Yeah, you know, but I'm saying he's saying what does it mean to actually win in those 2 minutes? I think maybe like the broader picture is like maybe I want to be the best golfer overall long term, but winning each specific tournament, it's a moment that's exciting, but then it goes away. So what's the bigger picture?
Well, whatever he's doing works because he keeps winning consistently. So I'm not going to ever be critical of the best golfer in the world. But I just look at he feels as though other things in his life are more rewarding. That okay. But I'm sure even, you know, there are people who get that trophy and they'll be crying and they'll be, you would think about Michael Jordan and LeBron James and all these things. These great moments. You graduate, it's a great moment. You can't just sit there the whole day in your gown and say, I graduated college. You got to move on. But I just think he's diminishing the accomplishment that so many other people want to sit in that seat. And because he's been there, he's like, it's no big deal. I know he's sincere. I just don't. The mindset is not going to work before anyone except Scotty Scheffler.
It's the Will Cain Show. Watch it live at noon Eastern, Monday through Thursday on FoxNews.com or on the Fox News YouTube channel. And don't miss a show. Get the podcast 5 days a week at FoxNewsPodcasts.com or wherever you download your favorite podcasts.